Hi, it's Alan Chartok in the Congressional Corner with one of my favorite people in the world, Tim Bresolotti, ace pollster and professor and director of the Western New England University Poll, professor of political science. Welcome, Tim.
Thank you, Alan.
Okay, so let's start with the word that is on everybody's lips now, guns. What can you tell us about polling and guns?
What we know from polling on various types of reforms is that they're pretty popular. And depending on the type of reform and the wording of the question, they'll command majority support even from Republicans, who tend to be a little more skeptical in these subject matters. If we look at some data on support or opposition for background checks for gun buyers, upwards of 90% of Americans support background checks for all gun buyers, and yet this is a piece of legislation that's stalled in Washington because the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is hesitant to bring it up. Although two things. One, the data I'm citing are from May, prior to the most recent mass shootings. And second, Majority Leader McConnell has said that when the Senate returns from its August recess, it will take up the issue of background checks.
Now, this is all about elections, when you think about it, because these senators must be looking really carefully, particularly the Republican senators, at what the polling data says. So if they run for re-election, and there's a whole class of them that are running for re-election, they got to be leaning on Mitch McConnell, right, and saying to him, hey, Mitch, you got to save us here, because if this comes up for a vote, we're doomed.
That's right. Because a reform like expanded background checks is so popular. What all candidates for the Senate would be mindful of is how this is going to play back home. And what we know is in the 2020 cycle, Republicans have to defend 22 of the 34 seats that are up in the Senate. And so they don't want to leave anything to chance at this point. So it will be interesting to watch how this plays out once the summer recess ends.
I'm fascinated by what I'm reading about Mitch McConnell's own numbers in Kentucky. What I read was that he was down to 33% in terms of his popularity. And that is a pretty good prognosticator that he may end up losing.
Well, that would be quite a shock, wouldn't it? McConnell has easily fended off challenges in the past. His last race against Allison Lundergan Grimes, Secretary of State in Kentucky, she was considered the Democrats' best hope of knocking him off. And he dispatched her pretty easily by linking her, back in 2014, to the Obama administration and environmental policies on coal, which coal being an important industry in Kentucky. Whether he can succeed in that regard in this cycle or not, it's hard to tell. Kentucky's a funny state. It has a tendency to elect Democrats governor, although they have a Republican governor right now. If you look at the incumbent senators that the Democrats would love to pick off, obviously McConnell is the prize. Favorability, job approval, they don't always translate into vote choice because you're asking people about an individual versus comparing that individual to an opponent.
Sure.
in an upcoming race. So we want to be cautious about that.
No, that's right. But 33%, that's pretty low. Mario Cuomo used to tell me you're below 50%, you're in trouble.
It can be. That can be the case. But again, it all comes down to comparisons.
Who you're running
against. Wow, and some other things as well. Turnout, who you're running against, resources, who's on the air, how many ads you're getting out there, not just on broadcasting cable, but online these days. So it's definitely, there are a handful of Senate races to watch. McConnell is one. Susan Collins in Maine, she has a couple of very strong potential Democratic opponents, and there's still a chance she might decide to retire. We've got Cory Gardner in Colorado, one of the presidential candidates. John Hickenlooper has said he might drop out of the presidential race and take on Gardner in Colorado. Folks are trying to convince Beto O'Rourke to take on John Cornyn in Texas. All kinds of interesting possibilities in 2020.
Now, a lot of these Democrats have very good numbers when they're compared to the Republicans, even in states which have traditionally elected Republicans. Nevertheless, we on the WAMC Roundtable panel have been duking it out over the question of silent voters, people who don't tell their pollsters or their mothers what they're going to do, and then they go and vote, for example, for Donald Trump. One wonders about your job as a pollster to sort of ferret these people out.
It's an ongoing challenge, for sure. Not just here, but in the UK as well. We call it over there the shy Tory effect, where the Conservative Party tends to poll lower than they actually do on election day. And so one way to think about this is to look not at any one individual poll, and that's in the U.S. or overseas, but the aggregate of them and the way the data are collected. Are there any significant differences between whether this poll was conducted online, where you'd have less of that social desirability factor, where people might be more likely to reveal their true intentions, versus telephone polling? So if people take a look at the aggregates, they might be able to filter out some of the stealth voting, shall we say, or stealth voting intentions.
Is there a way to poll people about their whether they're lying or not? You know, I mean, can you say, are you lying? Question. By the way, are you lying?
Right. Well, there are ways to move beyond having a respondent think about him or herself and how that individual might appear to the interviewer. So here's an example. Prior to the 2008 Democratic nominating contest, a number of pollsters were asking people not, would you vote for a woman for president? Would you vote for an African-American for president? But asking instead, thinking of the people you know, thinking about your family, thinking about your neighbors. And this was a subtle way to try to tease out intentions without having the respondent think, well, I'd better answer this the right way. I don't want to come off looking sexist or racist. And so you can do that. You can do some experimental work if you're doing a survey. It's something that we wrestle with. Again, online surveys, there's less of an issue there. And you'll see some of the most interesting research, particularly on racial attitudes, occurring in experiments in online surveys. The offset is, of course, are these representative samples? Can we draw some conclusions that we could apply to a population based on what we're seeing online? That's an open question, and one that really varies by the techniques that people are using to recruit that online sample.
Do you take into consideration as a pollster who is more likely to have access to online machinery?
Absolutely, yes. And the very best polling organizations in the country will provide internet access for online panels if individuals do not have that access. And that's a way to offset the digital divide, so that if you can't afford internet in your home, particularly broadband, if you are recruited to a panel, well-funded polling organizations will pay for your internet access to keep you in. Very expensive, and not a lot of places do it. Pew Research Center is one that has done it in the past. National Opinion Research Center at the University of Chicago has done it as well. And it does make a difference in terms of gathering more of a representative sample.
I don't know about anybody else, Tim Versalotti of the Western New England University poll and professor of political science. I don't know about anybody else, but every time you come on, I learn something, and I am incredibly grateful that you do it. When we come back the next time, let's see what else we can do.
I look forward to it.